in Seattle, Seattle. And you need to buy yourself a home. We'll be right there for you, because we're the realtors that you can trust. So go to RodandConsidDow.com.
Don't go anywhere unless you want to. It's the Ron and Don Show, starring Ron and Don, and sometimes me, at ronanddon.com.
Hey, you guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 707 now of the Ron and Don Show, and we are live in the Les Schwab Studios.
What is up, Ron and Don Nation?
And coming up on the Ron and Don Show, we're going to talk about things that you should be aware of if you're concerned about getting dementia. I think about it every day because dementia's in my family, Parkinson's in my family, and so I'm doing everything that I can do to make sure it doesn't happen to me. And oh my gosh, when I forget where my car keys are sometimes, or my iPods, I start to freak out and go, oh my god, I think I have dementia. And then I remember, I've been looking for my car keys since I was 18. So I haven't been looking for my iPods or my AirPods because those didn't exist then. So nonetheless, three things you should be aware of if you're thinking about dementia or someone in your family. And also, let's talk about climate change and the fact that it could save a lot of real estate. Where? In the Rust Belt. Isn't that kind of surprising? Before we get to that, though, let's get to this. Some new research says, and I don't even know if this is new, I'm looking at a map right now of the United States of America, and it's talking about the places where people don't go to religious services anymore. And I don't mean just Christian services. I mean any kind of service. So whether you worship Jesus, Satan. I hear there's not as many people worshiping Satan here in the Pacific Northwest as they used to. There was certainly a lot of that down in New Mexico, though. How about that? Or for people that go to Universal Church, or people that maybe are the Muslim faith, or people that are even Jewish, a lot of people may identify as a Christian or someone that's Jewish, but it doesn't necessarily translate into showing up for some type of congregation or religious service on a Saturday, Sunday, or a Friday night. So I'm looking at this, and would it surprise you that 65% and above of folks that live in the South, places like Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, all the way down to Florida, they are churchgoers, right? They show up to services. They like that. But as we begin to head west, and especially as we begin to head to the Northwest, Oregon and Washington in particular, we do not like going to church in Oregon and Washington. In fact, they say it's under 45%. I think it's even got to be lower than that. Get this, though. This is what's interesting, and I've shared this stat before. Did you know that Seattle, Washington has more churches here per capita? Yeah, in fact, we rank second in the nation per capita when it comes to the amount of churches that we have here, right? I think it's only Indianapolis that has more churches than we do. Why is that? Because folks were coming west, and when you came west, you could claim land. And guess who got here first? A lot of religious organizations got here first. They claimed that land. That's why you see so many churches that are built into our neighborhoods that look like our house, right? Yeah, these churches are in our neighborhoods where people come to live, work, and play. And now some of those churches are being sold off because they don't have congregations. And those churches and that real estate is worth so much money. So you see that happen a lot on Capitol Hill right now. So, Ron, does it surprise you that we live in a place that has all these churches and yet people don't seem to want to go to church?
It doesn't surprise me. I think the thing that does surprise me is that we haven't cracked the code on the community event that replaces that. So if you think of some of the reasons why people went to church, of course, some of it was religious, but a lot of it was just community. Like that was a place where you could go. If you think about a world with no internet or no computers, if you wanted to meet someone to date, where would you go? A lot of times you'd go to church. If you wanted to just hang out and have a social life, for a lot of people, that was a built-in way to have a social life. And there was a lot of social things. things where they would have get-togethers and potlucks and just meetings that you could go to and just hang out. There'd be volleyball sometimes or bowling or whatever. You would, your church was a social calendar, and you would get a physical piece of paper that had the calendar on it each week or each month, and you would chart your life around that, because you couldn't get, there was no internet to go on to figure out, hey, what's happening in and around my community. And so I think as the thing that is surprising to me is that now we're in this decoupled thing where you're like, okay, I'm not joining, I'm not a member of many things, but I still crave community. And I always look no further than if you go to a bar in Seattle that is dog friendly, it'll be packed. People bring their dog. They want to come in there and have a sense of community, I think, more than anything else. The church side of it makes sense to me in this regard. As we become, I think, a little more sophisticated and open, again, to more information and more things around the world, people are still looking for a life philosophy, but they want it to work in the modern times. They want it to be functional now. And we see this all the time in the political stories of like, oh, you know, you go to Florida, it's like, we need to ban these books because these books are anti-God, or this book is anti-Christian. And so therefore the solution is to ban the book. And I think for people in the Pacific Northwest are like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I need a life philosophy that's not afraid of books. I need a life philosophy that doesn't want to take away rights from other people. It wants to empower everybody. I want a philosophy of life that doesn't label this group as, you know, bad because of something that they couldn't choose, like sexual orientation, let's say, because I want them to live a fulfilled life. Or boy, I met a family whose child is transgender. And so now that I know someone with that, I don't want to subscribe to a life philosophy that's going to ostracize my friend's kid. And so people are still searching for this life philosophy. And you've seen the emergence of, you know, guided meditations or stuff for stoicism with a resurgence. These life philosophies are, and people sometimes just pick and choose. I'm going to take this from stoicism. It's kind of what I do. I like, I'm going to take this part of stoicism and this part of mindfulness and this part of, you know, technology or whatever, and kind of merge this in. I want to find a life philosophy that I can rely on, where it's not just hope and a prayer, but it's like, okay, when a life situation happens to me, I have a health situation, or I am feeling sad for whatever reason, I don't just want, I want a life philosophy that has some sort of practical skills in that. And I think that's what people in the Pacific Northwest specifically are gravitating towards, because it gets frustrating if you're investing time into a system that you feel like is not really reliable. It doesn't really work in the modern era. And if the answer is, well, ignore that or ban that or oppress that or cast that out, instead of saying, we should probably be more inclusive as the arc of history goes along and not less inclusive.
No.
I think that's the reason why. But I do feel like there's energy that's coming up of like, hey, let's find some community things where you can get some of that stuff that you used to get at church.
Yeah, and I think I grew up in the church. I grew up in the Catholic Church and then the evangelical movement. I even have worked in a church. And I think for me, like my son and I still, we pray at dinner time and then we pray at nighttime when we go to sleep. And I do that because he likes it. I've always done that on my own. I haven't put, he wants to do that. So we do that. And he's interested in all those things. So we talk about those things. And I try to not make decisions for him, but expose him to different things. I think it's boring if he believes exactly the way that I believe. I do have to say, though, I think the modern day church has done a lot of damage. It did a lot of damage to people in my family. I don't think it's ever taken full responsibility for that. You look at what the church did, because it's the church that controlled the Boy Scouts of America, especially the Mormon church. Look at what happened with the Boy Scouts, right? Look at what happened with the Catholic Church. And that all started in the Archdiocese where I went to church, when the bishop there, who actually confirmed me, started sleeping with little boys in sleeping bags on camp trips, right? And then you have men that entered the priesthood because they were gay and didn't want to reveal that. And then you also had men that entered the priesthood, and I'm not saying that gay people are child molesters. I'm not. Those are two different types of people. But you do have child molesters that entered the priesthood because they had access to kids. And we saw that. And we saw that in Christian schools. I would hear stories of my mom and dad growing up and the way that they'd be punished because they were both in Catholic schools. And then it helped me understand the reason why my mom and dad, when I was young, to me, it was capital punishment. It was brutal. Like, their punishments were brutal and they were physical. It's because that's what they learned going to Catholic. And I've never been that way with my son, and I will never be that way. And when I see someone being that way with their child, I say something to them. I do, because you're doing irrevocable harm, And if the idea of being a Christian, for instance, and that's where I come from, is to be Christ-like, do we really want to be Christ-like? He didn't go to church. The Sadducees, Herodians, the teachers of the law at the time didn't allow it. He didn't go. That's why he went out and told parables out in a farmer's field, because the farmers would listen to him, and he hung out with common people. Do we want to hang out with common people? And what about being poor? How do we feel about being poor? Because he was very poor. And what do we feel about being believing in our faith so much and being so radical that we'd be hung on a cross? And then if you look at his disciples, they were all hung on crosses, boiled to death. Some of them were peeled alive. Some of their wives were raped in front of them. If you read the works of Josephus, the teachers of the law. So it's very, very hard to live a Christian life if you're going to be Christ-like. And then what we've done now is we have cool stages and drum sets and microphones and seeker services. I read an article then about a guy who's the biggest evangelical pastor in America. He has a camp called Man Camp. And when he preaches, he uses the F word, and son of a bitch. He smokes a cigarette sometimes when he's preaching, drinks a beer, has a beer shirt on. And then there was pressure on this author that went to Man Camp to be baptized with all the other men. And I just went, this is ridiculous, right? So for me, when I get out of the trails and I'm running outside, that's where I feel connected. That's where I feel probably connected in my own spiritual life, and that's my own journey. But I'm totally into people that want to go to a church and go to Man Camp and have drums and microphones. Jesus didn't need drums or microphones or a satellite or a cable system or a devil busting satellite like Jim Baker used to. He didn't need building. He didn't need real estate. He didn't have any of that, right? He didn't need any of that to get his message out, and it's out. So you believe it or you don't. But I look at his life 2,000 years ago and the way it's reflected in the church today, and there's a huge disconnect. They don't seem to be the same. And I think the church has brought a lot of abuse to a lot of people's lives, and it's been pushed under the rug and not really dealt with. And what did the church do? They did what a lot of people do. They just wrote a check and said, everybody shut up. We'll see you on the other side of this. Hey guys, Ron and Don here for Les Schwab. You know, when it comes to your safety, your family's safety on the road, Les Schwab, well, they have you covered. Yeah. Les Schwab tires, wheels, brakes, batteries, alignment, steering, suspension, everything they sell and service is focused on your safety. Plus, they want to save you a lot of money. Now, right now, during the Les Schwab spring tire sale, you can save up to $80 instantly when you purchase a set of four select tires, plus $50 with Les Schwab financing for a total of $130. Stop by or book your appointment at LesSchwab.com. That's LesSchwab.com. That's Les Schwab. Doing the right thing since when? 1952. All right, so this is how real estate works. I'm at a Seahawks game, and I'm watching the Seahawks win the Super Bowl, and I'm in my friend George's seat, and I'm sitting next to my friend Mike Martin. Known Mike now over a decade. He calls me the other day, says, hey, I got a tech friend. He's in Hawaii. He owned a property in Green Lake. He's going to fix it up. He went to Hawaii. He said, I'm never going home. So he's had this rental now for 10 years. His name is Jude. So Mike puts me in touch with Jude. Jude calls me and says, hey, I got to sell this house. I call Scotty. We go over the house. And this house has a foundation problem. It has a roof problem. It has lots of problems. And in order to fix this house and bring it to market, it's going to take about $100,000. And then the house is going to be worth about $925,000. Anyway, there's a builder that Jude knows that says, hey, well, I'll give you $835,000. And then there's a neighbor that says, hey, I'll give you $850. And then what I did is I got on the phone with one of my builder friends. Because again, I don't like seeing homes torn down, but there's some that have to be torn down when they have bad foundations, right? And this is a home that has to come down. This builder said, you know what? I'll pay $1,060,000 for that particular house. So case closed. There are builders right now paying more for properties than people are willing to pay when they step in and say, wow, this thing has a bad foundation. This thing is still in oil. This has a bad roof. There's a lot of work to do here. So while many homes I like to see restored, some can't be, right? So when you need us, if you have a piece of property, if you have an old home that has a bad leaky roof, lots of deferred maintenance, call us. Because sometimes the best thing to do is to fix it up and bring it to market if you have the funds to do so. And sometimes the best thing to do is to create a new property and reimagine it. Because guess what? Here in Seattle, yeah, there's not a lot of property just laying around. So when you need us, whether it's wholesale, retail, investing, buying, selling, let's sit down. RonandDonSitDown.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. Dementia, I think it's interesting. When you get on the other side of 50, I think before 50, you're always thinking about the things that make you feel alive. And then you get on the other side of 50 and you wonder, what is the thing that's going to cause me to be dead? Like, what is the thing that's going to kill me? And then you start realizing as you get older, and this just isn't a thing, it's a scientific thing, especially if you're living a good, fulfilling life. And it doesn't mean that life is always easy, but it's a good, fulfilling life and you feel purpose. Life starts going really fast. I know in being a dad for my son, people always say it flies by. Or I remember when I used to play football, and my friends that were older that were no longer playing football, they're like, man, enjoy it, because you're going to remember the last time you wear that uniform and you sit down on that bench and you don't want to take off your cleats or your helmet, and you just don't want. And it's true. Like, I remember the last game that I played vividly, and just something that you love. And if you really love your life, right? Like, football went like that. I really love being a parent. It's going like that. It's going rather quickly. And so on the other side of 50, you start looking at, well, what are the things that could help increase my lifespan, longevity? Or what are the things, if I've increased my lifespan, or with the lifespan I'm currently going to have, how can I make sure those last years are relatively healthy? Because you start looking around, you're going to less situations where people are getting married. You're going to more parties where people are going through their second divorce. And then you're certainly beginning to go to more funerals and give more eulogies, right? And I have a couple friends right now that will probably pass sometime this year. And they've asked me to give the eulogy. And Ron and I just gave a eulogy of one of our very dear friends that we've told you about. So with that, you start looking at, well, what are the things that are going on in my family? And like, in my family, we see dementia. In my family, we see liver disease. In my family, we see Parkinson's that has shown up in my immediate family, in my extended family. Also in my family, we do see some longevity, right? My grandmother, I think, was 94 when she passed. My Uncle George was well into his 90s, but that's not part of my bloodline. My sister died at a very young age. My cousin also died at a very young age. He died from a heart condition. My sister died from ALS. My father died relatively young. My understanding is he died from Parkinson's. I was around when he had his first heart attack, but he ended up having three of those. And so for me, I look at that and I'm like, wow, am I wired to have a heart attack? And what are some of the things I can do where hopefully that won't happen? Or what are some of the things that I can do? Because genetically, for some of us, you're going to get dementia. Genetically, you're going to get Parkinson's, right? But sometimes what we can do is we can hold those things off, and maybe we die before they actually take over. Think about prostate cancer. And for a lot of men, we all have it to some degree. It's just that for some of you, it's not going to kill you till you're 108, and chances are you're not going to be around when you're 108 because something ends up taking you out as a result of that. But I think of so many men right now, three men on my block, two of my other good friends that are fighting through that right now. I think of other young men that have brain cancer. We see what's happening with the royals right now, where they're like, wow, Yeah, young people getting cancer. Prince Charles getting cancer. Kate getting cancer. And now they're saying, there's an article the other day that said there's a lot of young people that are getting cancer. So what are some of the things that we can do? And I was reading this new study, especially when it comes to dementia. It said, number one, whatever you do, you don't want to get type 2 diabetes. Dementia in a lot of ways is considered type 3 diabetes. And how do you not get type 2 diabetes? You have to be concerned about your blood sugar, your insulin level. It's really driven by that. And chances are, for some people, it's just hereditary. You can be in great shape and you get diabetes. Nothing you can do about it. It's in your bloodline. But for a lot of us, if you're eating not just processed, but ultra-processed food, and if you're redlining it with sugar and salt all the time with ultra-processed food, and you're not exercising, you're not moving, and then on top of that, you add on some of those habits of smoking, drinking, not sleeping, you're well on your way to type 2 diabetes. So number one, don't get type 1 or type 2 diabetes, because then you're on your way to type 3 diabetes. The other thing that they said that is really important when it comes to risk factors is understanding how important it is to be physically active and to be educated about that. And then the last thing is to really have a sense of our alcohol consumption. I think for a lot of us as we get older, I know for me when I was younger, one of the ways that I would deal with stress is through drinking alcohol. And what alcohol did for me is what it does for all of us. It calms you down, right? Until it doesn't. When it comes to visit you at 3 o'clock in the morning, when it wakes you up and now you can't go back to sleep. So I have found is that I have gotten older. When I was younger, and we talked about this before, you can drink lots of alcohol and the body is very forgiving. But as you get older, on the other side of 50, you know, having a glass or two is very different. But you start having three or four. Yeah. And what happens to the brain and the neuroplasticity of the brain, it really begins to affect that. So for a lot of us, yeah, a glass of red wine here or there, that's one thing. But I think as we get older, if we are still coping with alcohol, for a lot of us, and I know for me, I had to recognize that that is going to come to visit me at some point, either through blood pressure or through dementia or Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, all that stuff has to do with the veins in your brain. And it has to do with the neuroplasticity of your brain, which is a muscle, right? And if there's alcohol running through there all the time and you don't give your brain a chance to sit without alcohol, it has some real damaging effects down the road. So what about you? Do you think about Parkinson's? Do you think about dementia? It's a little different for you because I know you know who your birth mom is now and your birth dad, but you didn't always know what your family history was. And I don't even know if you kind of know what your family history is now. Do you think about those things?
Not as much as you do. And you're right. I am adopted. So it's difficult. I've got that my entire life where you're at the doctor and they're like, do you have a family history of XYZ? It's like, no, no. Like, I don't know. And so I do know a little bit now more than I did. But let me ask you this. When I was listening to you talk there, if you could take a test that would tell you definitively, hey, Don, you are or you are not going to get dementia or Parkinson's, and we think it'll be around this age, would you want that test? Or would you not want to know? If someone could say, Don, you're 100% you're going to get dementia, and it's going to set on when you're 67 years old. Would you want to know that?
Well, I know that you can take a test now, and that test has particular markers. And like I have a friend that went and took those pretty extensive tests the other day. And so he doesn't have the markers for Alzheimer's, for instance. And at the same time, his doctor told him, based on his behavior, he's like, but even though you don't have that marker, that genetic marker, he said, you could still develop dementia just based on your behavior if you decide that you're going to smoke, drink, eat a lot of red meat, and you're going to sit in front of the TV and watch Family Feud all day. So you're still a candidate, but his family history and the marker says this shouldn't happen to you as long as you continue. And he lives a very healthy lifestyle. He's a dad too of three kids. As long as you continue.
So would you want to know or you wouldn't want to know?
I'm fine with knowing that. Yeah, I'm fine. Right. I think, especially if you have kids, I think.
I don't know if I'd want to know the specific timing.
I'm an older dad. So for me, like, you know, my son, we sit in the morning. Sometimes we'll read a book. Sometimes we'll listen to a podcast. Right now he's learning about investments and he's learning, he has some jobs that he's going to do that he's been doing where he makes some money, spend some, give some, save some. So this weekend we're going to open up his first Fidelity account, And I want him to have some kind of, you think about this. If you and I were opening up a Fidelity account when we were 13, wow.
Spent it by the time I was 14.
Yeah. So anyway, we've been listening to this particular podcast that we really like and learning about custodial accounts and how much you can save and how you can snowball and what that means. So I want to be around to help him understand all that, but I know at some point I'm not going to be around. It's one of the reasons why I spend time writing things and videos and even some of the stuff that I put out on Facebook, because I hope for that page to be memorialized someday. And sometimes I'm just writing to him publicly, and then I have a Gmail account and I write to him privately. But yeah, I want to know. Like I think, you know, there are people in my family that are very, very stubborn about taking any kind of test to understand what's happening with their health. And I think that's pretty selfish. If you could know and then be prepared for the end of your life, I think everybody deserves that. And we see that in our real estate business sometimes. There's people that do a beautiful job of knowing that they're exiting this world and everything is set up. And it makes it really easy for the family. And there's other people that don't do that. And that's when the knives come out sometimes. So we will see you on the other side of this.
Hey, it's Ron and Don here with Mitch Weeks. You know him as Mitch.Loans. And Mitch, a lot of people find themselves in this scenario. Maybe they're downsizing and they're like, where am I going to live when I sell this house? Because I don't have my other house yet. And it freaks them out. And sometimes they tap the brakes. Is there anything we can do in a loan way to help someone in that scenario?
Absolutely. We have a great new program. It's called Buy Before You Sell, and it's structured to help exactly those type of people. What you can do is you tap into the equity in your home in advance. So let's say you've been living in a house for a while, you've already paid it down, and about half of its equity. You can get up to 80% of the value of your house in that equity. You get that in, and that's the down payment on your next home. Hmm. Not only that, but in this program, you're not hit for your debt on your old house or that loan, because it's a 0% interest loan. And because of that, you can buy your next house before you have to sell your current house. It means you don't have to move twice, and it just adds a lot less stress.
Yeah, absolutely adds a lot less stress. So if that's a scenario for you, or you've been having a stumbling block, if I don't know where I'm going to live first before I sell this house, give Mitch a call or you can contact us. It's Mitch.Loans or RonandonSitDown.com. Again, Mitch.Loans.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. We talk about climate change, and we talk about real estate on the show. It's kind of interesting. I saw some articles today that said that climate change is going to change the way that the world spins on its axis, and as a result of that, it's going to change all our clocks. They're also experimenting with, some of these areas where the water is going to rise, maybe what we should do instead of retreating inland, maybe what we should do is we should start building cities that actually float. Yeah. And here's the other thing. You think about the Rust Belt, right? And I don't know if you've been to Pittsburgh lately or a place like Chicago or a place like Indianapolis. Those places, Detroit for sure, have been considered part of the Rust Belt. They say, and this is kind of interesting because of real estate prices, also because of job opportunities and also because of climate change, that young people are beginning to reconsider living in places like the cities I just mentioned. Grand Rapids, Ron and I used to work there in Grand Rapids, Michigan. They have furniture warehouses there that sat, and they were dilapidated. It used to be the furniture capital of the world. They sat there for 50 years. And then as they kind of reinvented that city, some of that to do with tech, mostly has to do with medical insurance. So there were jobs there. Ron, I know that you had bought a house there at one time, much more affordable to live. And then one of the reasons why people didn't want to live in Grand Rapids, and it was very cold when we lived there, and there's lots of snow. We got snowmobiles. This is back in 05. I talk to my friends there now. My son has some relatives that he's connected to back in Grand Rapids. They have very, very mild winters. They certainly don't get the snow accumulation. It's very hard to go snowmobile in there now. And even where I grew up in a place called Gurnee, Illinois, born in Waukegan, you get a lot of this lake effect snow, which since then has disappeared. And the climate has become very mild. In a lot of ways, it's more like Seattle, a little more sunshine, than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. So they say as a result of that, we're now seeing some of these cities begin to emerge as some of the hottest properties in the country, including Cleveland. For some reason, everybody wants to live in Cleveland. How about that?
I think this trend is going to continue for some of the reasons you said. And the other reasons being that it just, people get priced out. There are some cultural things about Seattle. I always ask people that just came to Seattle from wherever they were from. It's like, what's your experience been like just culturally, especially if someone moved here from the South or moved here from the East Coast? If you're from the South and you move here, it is jarring, culturally jarring to do. And so I see the appeal of doing that. I was just in Detroit. I had been to Detroit before, but never really kind of walked around as a tourist in Detroit. And so I was in Detroit last year, and I got to say, it's cool, man. There's some stuff going on there. Like you talked about abandoned buildings being refurbished. There's a vibe there that is very energetic and pays homage to the past and recognizes the past, but then is trying to reinvent itself. And there's this real sort of, I was going to say blue collar, but it's not all blue collar. There's a real kind of what you see is what you get mentality that I really liked. Like, people are very straightforward. They're very just face value. Like, there's not a lot of ambiguity in where they're coming from. And if you like that, it's refreshing. It was refreshing to me to just be in Detroit, walk around Detroit and go, there's some really amazing buildings, really amazing opportunities. People are just kind of doing it. Everything from, like, you'd see a guy that's like, I'm going to make high-end headphones. I'm going to make my own factory. That's what I'm into. I bought some tooling that was abandoned by General Motors, and we're in this co-op space, and that's what I'm doing. And so, or restaurants or whatever. And it was like, that's kind of cool. Like, you're in an inexpensive place to live. You can get office space. I was in Louisville, Kentucky in the past couple of years. I was with a bunch of architects, and we were looking at a building downtown that was like, there was so, I don't remember the number off the top of my head, maybe like $3 million or something. And between the three of us, the four of us, we're like, should we buy a building in Louisville? Like, holy crap, you're like right on the main street. And we didn't know enough about the market, but as a joke, we're kind of like, there's houses in Seattle or in the Bay Area that are $3 million. How are you buying a 5-story building on the main drag in Louisville for a couple million dollars? It's like, you could do anything in here. You could put a restaurant, a brewery, residential. Like, it was thinking, when you spend a lot of time on the coasts, your mind gets warped a little bit. You think about, you can go to these other towns and be like, okay, I could live in, if you sold a house here in Seattle, you could most likely just buy outright a house in Cleveland, and then you could buy a house in Alabama near the ocean, and still have money left over. Yeah. So you can spend half your year in Cleveland, half your year down south, and you'd still be making money. Like, it, for a lot of people, that is a big eye-opener now with climate change, of going, maybe I don't need to live on the coast anymore because I can find these other places, and maybe I just buy two houses.
Yeah. I think Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, that's the perfect example, right? She makes $13 million a show. $13 million a show. He's worth about $100 million. So she works a couple weeks, and that's all she has to do to be as worth as much. He had a million-dollar mansion in Kansas City where he plays football. A house in Bothell, you buy a house in Kenmore for about $1 million, maybe a three-bedroom ranch. And I'm like, $1 million mansion? How is Taylor Swift staying at $1 million mansion? And I looked at it online because I was so, and I'm like, my God, it's $1 million mansion. It's massive. So then he upgraded to his $6 million mansion. This $6 million mansion in Kansas City looks like Buckingham Palace. And now I understand that he's hanging out in her mansion that's in Los Angeles. It's about as big as his mansion that's back in Kansas City. But her mansion, I think, is like a $300 million mansion. So very, very different real estate prices in those different spots and places. So anyway, hey, guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ron and Don Show. We sure do appreciate it. If you need us, everything's at ronanddon.com. I want to thank our good friends at Les Schwab. They have a great tire sale going on right now. If you're thinking about driving around this spring, or you're going to do some summer road trip traveling, just stop by Les Schwab Tire Center. They'll put your rig up on the rack. They'll check it out. Make sure everything's road trip ready, because you're going to have your family in there. You want to make sure everything's safe. Your brakes are safe. My tires are always out of air, though, for some reason. I don't know why that happens. Maybe I should stop hitting curbs. But yeah, we'll take care of that for you if you need something. They'll give you a price right then and there, and chances are they can fix it right then and there. And if not, they'll just send you on your way. Not like the other guys. They charge you to actually look at your rig and then say what's wrong. And sometimes they'll tell you things are wrong that aren't really wrong. They don't do that at Les Schwab, so you don't have to worry about that, okay? You only pay for what you need. Also, I want to thank Mitch at Mitch.Loans. If you need a loan, get in touch with Mitch. In fact, he's working on a deal right now. We're writing up a deal. And yeah, if you need a mortgage broker, Mitch is great, right? And don't forget, he answers phone calls at night and the evenings. You can apply online at Mitch.Loans. And people are even, I think his interest rates are going to go down at some point this year. You're beginning to think about refinancing. You can do that with Mitch. Hey, if you need us, it's your broadcasters, your friends, your real estate agents, you can always reach out. Everything's at ronanddon.com, and we'll sit down with you virtually online at ronanddonsitdown.com. All right? We'll see you next time. You keep your head up and your shoulders back. You've been listening to Ron and Don Show. Olay! On the Ron and Don Radio.
Now keep your head up and your shoulders back, and keep blowing that trumpet, and we'll see you next time.
Olay!
Only.
Olay!
Only.
Olay!
Only on the Ron and Don Radio Network.